This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Beyond the old-time ranchers, humans have been living in the American Northwest for more than 10,000 years. Theodora Birdbear is a lifetime resident of the Fort Berthold Reservation. She serves on the board of directors for the Dakota Resource Council. Theodora, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you.
Well, please go ahead and tell us what you think people need to know, what they aren't being told about this big oil and gas boom in North Dakota.
Yes. You know, the Missouri River is the major river in western North Dakota, and it's the source of drinking water for me, my family, and most of our tribal members on Fort Berthold. And that's in addition to the many communities up and down the Missouri River. Groundwater is a limited source in our arid, dry country in western North Dakota. And with billions of barrels of oil projected out here in the Bakken, the oil industry is looking for a source of fracking water. According to their own projections, they are just starting to frack and drill out here. There was a news article in one of the statewide newspapers this winter that the North Dakota Industrial Commission director said the plan was to drill and frack every square mile out here in western North Dakota. Your listeners probably know that fracking is a part of a unconventional process, and it requires millions of gallons of potable water to extract the Bakken oil. But because there's never really been any planning in the Bakken oil field development in North Dakota, no, there's no state, no federal, and no tribal agents that is monitoring or measuring the loss of potable water from oil and gas development in a very arid state like North Dakota, which is also experiencing drought conditions out here in the West at a minimum. And it's only based on estimates by the industry and the North Dakota Industrial Commission. They're estimating that fracking consumes 2 million gallons of potable water for each Bakken well site. And when you multiply this times the number of wells that are currently producing in North Dakota, that's about 8,024 wells, you get an idea of the level of unmonitored industrial consumption of water. At a very minimum, that's about 16 billion, with a B, gallons of potable water used for fracking so far. And this is in a very arid region in the middle that's experiencing a drought. So the drilling and fracking is just starting out here. I think one of the reasons why maybe the public isn't really aware of the volume of potable water being lost is because the government and the industry likes to measure the water loss impacts in terms of acre feet, and few people in the public really understand what an acre foot translates to. The extreme consumption, industrial consumption of this potable water comes at a time when the snow melt into the Missouri River has been declining, and I believe this is due to climate change or global warming, and I've lived in Mandaree most of my life. And over the years, I witnessed the change in shorter winters, less snow, and hotter, drier, and windier summers. So in that regard, on Fort Berthold, we've experienced a high number of prairie fires last year from oil well sites. And we also live in an arid, windy, dry area. So out here, it's a very, very rural area. We need a reliable and permanent source of water out here to fight fires and protect lives. In addition to the high consumption of water by fracking, there's a dramatic increase in population also occurring in western North Dakota brought on by the Bakken oil field development. And this population growth is another new demand on the Missouri River, and it's only going to continue to grow in the years ahead. Our state and federal political leaders seem to think that natural resources, including water, are unlimited in arid country like where we live out here in western North Dakota. And this kind of thinking allows the industry to consume billions of gallons of potable water for fracking without really accounting for their immediate impacts or potentially long-term impacts. So we need to responsibly conserve water for the next generation to come, and we need to determine what are the actual water resources available today. For us, I think in the United States, this means that the U.S. policy needs to support an energy conversion to a renewable energy opportunities that already exist in this country today. In the United States, 5% of the renewable energy capability exists just in Indian country alone. And North Dakota is also one of the windiest states in the nation, so we could do better, and we need to do better in North Dakota and in the United States. And in North Dakota, especially in western North Dakota, we really need to protect our primary source of drinking water, which is the Missouri River. Right now, we need to address the water quantity issues that are identified in the work report, Gone for Good. And we really do need an impartial study of the current water resources that are available out here in North Dakota.
And when I think about all the roads, the trucks, the noise, the dust, the breakup of habitat, I've got to think that the animals are suffering too.
Oh, yes. You know, I live out in the Mandaree area on Fort Berthold. We're the largest land base here on Fort Berthold. Prior to 2007, we were a very rural and isolated area, and I think we were undeveloped from industrial development, and this was really kind of a habitat sanctuary for animals and endangered species. But I was talking to the tribal fish and game director probably last week, and he said it's hard to find any deer out here because all their habitat is now being invaded by well sites out in the Mandaree area.
And there's a lot of small plants and small animals that we don't even know about, and we should know about it, but I'm presuming that nobody's even looking at that.
You know, that's part of the unplanned development that's going on out here in western North Dakota. There was just a rush for development. The populations had not, you know, were struggling economically. And I guess, you know, people reached for the money that they saw that was going to come, but it was never factored in. What are the unacknowledged costs that we will be bearing in the future from this development? And we still don't. You know, we're seeing them today. I see visible impacts. I'm in the targeted area of development on Fort Berthold, and I see some prairie fires from the open flares of the well sites. These flares go 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and it's a very dry country. I've seen two prairie fires about a mile or two from my house, and they threatened nearby the homes of tribal members that live there. We've had a really big fires last summer. So there's a lot of unplanned impacts that people are now experiencing. There's a lot of emissions coming from the open flaring of this natural gas. They don't, because there was such a rush to develop it, there's not any mechanism to gather that natural resource. And so it just flared into the open air. It's not reinjected into the well. There's no pipeline system here, but pipelines have their own issues also. So, yeah, there's going to be impacts on human health here, and there's a degradation of air quality. And I was at a meeting last week on pipelines, and folks were talking about the loss of quality of life out here in western North Dakota that's being destroyed by this development.
We've built up a picture of Native Americans having a special connection to the land as a sacred place. Do you think that sanctity and relationship is being violated?
I know it's being violated. I think there's in a community within Fort Berthold, there was an attempt to put a oil waste dump site in that community without their knowledge. The effort was to try to get it into the community without any public notice and attempted to avoid public comment that was required for that dump site. However, people got wind of it. They knew something was going on. There was a very big excavation process going on, but nobody could finally, probably about 4 weeks later, people found out it was a oil waste site, and they rose up against it and really put the pressure to stop that site. But there's all kinds of that kinds of activity going on in the state of North Dakota. There's a lot of radioactive fracking waste that's coming out of the Bakken Shale. And that's kind of just come into becoming visible to the public this year. And now counties are being asked to change their zoning requirements to remove any restrictions on radioactive waste. And small communities are fighting this, but you're fighting a big industry and a complicit government that is getting a lot of revenue from this development. Sadly, the state government, it's like, you know, in the center of North Dakota, and most of the population is in eastern North Dakota. they don't really see or experience the impacts that people that live in western North Dakota are seeing. I feel like it's not a priority to them, but, you know, we don't want to be a dump site in western North Dakota, not on Fort Berthold and not in western North Dakota. We value our land, our connection to our land as tribal members. There's a existing connection with our land that we still articulate in our hearts and in our beliefs. Sadly, our tribal government, the leadership is pretty much pro-development. Some of them have businesses in the industry. So there are some conflicts of interest that exist. That's an issue here on Fort Berthold.
Well, money's the big poison wherever it goes, I think. I'm wondering, this sounds to me, what you're describing, it's almost like another invasion by the white man. Am I going too far to say that?
Oh, no, not at all. You know, when I listen to, I'm a part of the Dakota Resource Council, and I attend the meetings on oil and gas issues and the pipeline meeting last week. And from the way people were talking about the effects they were feeling, I thought, well, they are just now getting a sense of what Indian people felt when the federal government pushed for folks to move out here, and how we as tribal members felt when our lives were impacted significantly. So the impact of invasion is very similar that's going on today, and that's another thing that we're also dealing with here on Fort Berthold.
Do you find that there's some wisdom from the elders that could help us cope with this?
I think what we need to remember is our connection with our land, that our land is really, it's life-giving to us. And we have to protect that relationship with it. That's what's going to save us. I just can't express that enough, that I think sometimes folks get, you know, separated from land. You live in a city, maybe, or you're not a landowner or a home out there in the country. But even the smallest thing, like having a garden, it connects you back with the earth. And I think your relationship with the earth needs to be alive. It needs to be active. It needs to be giving both ways. And that's really what is going to help keep us alive and keep us in good health with our environment. So we have an obligation to protect our environment. It works for us. It takes care of us. It's life-giving. And so we need to respect that relationship with it.
Thank you so much for saying that. I needed to hear that, too. From Mandaree, North Dakota, we've been talking with activist Theodora Bird-Bear, a member of the Dakota Resource Council. Theodora, thank you for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.